everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special presentation on How Would Jesus Vote for President, right after this. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 7, that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thence they return again. Now, that's a very scientific statement. And that's because every year, the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. It's about 286,000 cubic miles of water flow into the oceans every year. And for century after century and millennium after millennium, this has been going on, and the sea hasn't increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Well, we call it the cycle of evaporation and precipitation. And the writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx. And that's because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. And that's because every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds again, and then ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. Now, in the modern science of meteorology, we understand how this is done, and we understand and comprehend the laws that are concerned with it. Modern science has learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we conduct twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. So for more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, it's election time, boys and girls, and I said, how would Jesus vote for president? Or better yet, what if Jesus was running for president? And he was in the presidential debates, and the moderator said, well, now, Mr. Jesus, how would you vote? Or what would your policy or position be on Social Security? Or Social Security reform. If you'll remember, President Bush, a couple of years ago, he said that what we needed to do with Social Security is to privatize it. Now, Social Security, when it started back in 1935, between 35 and 40, those 5 years, they began a Social Security fund, they organized a bureaucracy, and they started taxing wages and salaries and tips and so on, and they only took 1%. They took a 0.5% from your employer and 0.5% from you, and they put it into a fund, and they called it Social Security. And remember, the Depression was on, and so, you know, it was a pretty logical step to make, I guess. At least we look back on it today and think, well, that was a pretty logical step. Now, our founding fathers, they weren't very smart guys. You know, they didn't think about Social Security at all. They didn't come up with a neat idea like Franklin Roosevelt did. So they neglected to put that into our federal constitution. way back in 1787. So fortunately for all of us, our brilliant politicians back in the 1930s came up with this idea of a retirement program or an emergency fund or something, you know, that's going to take care of you in your old age. So they came up with Social Security. Now, as the Social Security program grew by 1940, when they started paying out checks, there were 80 people paying in for every one person drawn out. Well, that was a pretty good plan. 80 people are paying into this fund to support poor people that are retiring on Social Security or no longer able to work, or they're disabled or something like that. And after all, somebody has to take care of these people, don't they? I mean, what are you going to do with people, you know, that are homeless? What are you going to do with old people that are 80 years old and don't have an income and can't work anymore? So by 1945, the number of people that were paying into the program and the number of people drawing out, the ratio dropped to 45 to 1. By 1957, the ratio had dropped to 16 to 1. By 1996, the number had dropped to 3.2 to 1. Today, we're down to about 2 to 1, or approaching 2 to 1. And about 2020 or so, it's going to be down to 1 to 1. Our birth rates are dropping, and more baby boomers are coming into the program. And so, just imagine this. That means that all of your Social Security taxes in the year 2020 or thereabouts, when you pay in your Social Security tax, all of that money is going to go to one other person to support him. All right, as the program continues on, pretty soon there will be two people drawing out and one person paying in. And then there will be four people drawing out and then one person paying in, and then eight people drawing out and then one person paying in, and then 16 people drawing out. You see, if you just follow the numbers from 1940 until today, and then extrapolate those same numbers into the future, maybe a little higher math, you know, for most of us, but then that's an extrapolation we call that. You can see that as time goes on, there's going to be a greater and greater burden. You know, for instance, in 1940, 80 people were paying in, one person was drawing out. Today, it's two people are paying in and one person's drawing out. And pretty soon, you know, as it continues on, there'll be one person paying in and one person drawing out, and then one person paying in, and then two persons drawing out, and so on. And then at some point in time, I don't know where this is going to end, but at some point in time, boys and girls, there are going to be more people drawing out of Social Security than there are people paying into it. Can you see that? Okay. Then as time progresses along, then you're expected in your labors to support more and more of these people, I could predict, I think safely, that at some point in time, there will be more mouths for you to feed than you're able to feed. That there will not be enough physical energy in your body to feed all those people. You know, I'll picture it like this. You've got four children, and you're working hard right now to feed those four children. It's double it to eight. Could you feed eight? Well, you'd say to yourself, well, I guess if I could feed four, and I guess if I worked hard, maybe on weekends, took on a second job, and maybe I could feed eight. Okay, well, could you feed 16? Could you feed 32, 64, 128? See, at some point in time, you will physically be unable to accomplish that goal. That's all. Social Security is a bankrupt idea. It will not work forever. It's worked for 70 years or 75 years, but it isn't going to work forever. Now, there's another complicating factor that we haven't discussed, so let's discuss that one. The Social Security tax, when they started it, was 1%. That's a half a percent from you and a half a percent from your employer. Truth of the matter is, it was 1% and it all came from you because you're the laborer and you're the guy that produced it all. Your employer didn't produce any of it. None. He collected. He didn't produce it. All right, so then the tax went up to 2%, 4%, 8%. Now it's up to 16%. And as it continues on, they'll have to double it again to 32%. At some point in time, I mean, you know, to make it continue on for some more time, you have to raise the tax rate. Well, 32%, then it goes to 64%, then 128%. And I would predict that long before government takes 100% of everything you create and produce for Social Security and leaves nothing for you to buy gasoline with, pay the rent with, or to feed your own kids with, it will collapse, that you will stop paying into it. I'm just making that prediction because I already reached that point. You know, long before it got to, you know, 16, 32, and 64%, I dropped out of it. I said, to hell with this, I'm not going to participate in it. 14 million Americans no longer participate in Social Security. Well, it doesn't mean that it collapsed because 14 million of us dropped out of it, but I just wanted to point out to you that at some point in time, as taxes get higher and higher, you'll find more and more people refuse to participate in the program. Now, I know you're sitting there saying, well, it's the law, you have to. Oh, wait a minute, you know, it may be the law, but there comes a point in time, you know, when the law becomes so oppressive that people stop practicing that law. You know, just like you people. A long time ago, you stopped practicing the law of Moses. You stopped practicing the law of God. You stopped practicing the law that says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. So, you know, when a law becomes oppressive, or when it just becomes so distasteful that you hate it, despise it, and don't like it anymore, you won't do it anymore. You just won't participate in it. That's the way that works. Even if the law is good, benefits you, and it's a real good idea, you'll just quit. And then, of course, you can say, well, there's going to be a penalty. Well, it may be. Sure, there's a penalty. There's a penalty for adultery. There's a penalty for smiting your parents. There's a penalty, you know, for failing to tithe. But, you know, pretty soon it gets to the point where I'd rather pay the penalty than I would to practice the law. And that's the way Americans are today, or that's where we're at today. Americans today will not practice the Mosaic Law. They won't practice the law of God. They will want to practice a different law. So Hillary Clinton comes along. She says, I'm going to give you Medicare. Well, how are you going to pay for Medicare? You're going to pay for it through Social Security taxes. You're going to pay for it through taxes. You're going to pay more taxes. And Americans are willing to do that. They've been out taking polls, at least, you know, if the poll takers are telling us the truth, and they ask people, you know, well, would you rather pay these high $13,000 a year health insurance premiums, or would you rather have a national compulsory health care program? And people, by in the majority, anyway, 60% or so, say they'd rather pay higher taxes and have a compulsory health care system. So health care, translated, means socialized medicine. So what's happened is government policy and insurance company greed and medical association greed, whatever you call it and however it works, has gotten to the point where you can't afford medical care, medical insurance. And so I guess now somebody comes along and says, well, then the solution is we got to have socialized medicine. We got to have national health care insurance. I'd like to propose a new, more comprehensive idea than that. If you subscribe to the idea that you evolved from green algae and that disease is a part and parcel of the evolutionary process, you probably need Social Security health care insurance. I don't deny that. But if you subscribe to the idea that you were created by a God, a creator, a superior intelligence, or whatever you want to call it, and that superior intelligence created you and created the diseases and created the life forms and the processes that you see around you, then you have a different mindset. Yeah, I've got a different mindset than the average Joe Sixpack. Because I'm opposed to national health care insurance, and I'm not a Republican, and I'm not a Democrat, and I'm not a conservative or a liberal. I'm not trying to get you to vote one way or the other. I just took a look at it, and I said, okay, listen, I'm not opposed to you people having health care insurance. I mean, after all, if that's what you want to do, get after it. I just don't want to pay for it. I don't want to pay your health care bill. So that's why I dropped out. I just said, hell with it, and you people get after it, you know, go ahead and just leave me out. Now somebody says, well, but you have to participate. No, I don't. And neither do you. Now, if you want to be cunningly coerced into practicing that kind of thing, well, that's fine with you. But, you know, we have a creator out here. I do, anyway. I got a God out here. He says, I don't want you practicing limited liability, Gordon. I want you to practice strict liability. That's the law. And then I want you to get after it. Now, you can choose to follow Hillary Clinton and limited liability, or you can follow me and strict liability. Take your choice. So I looked at it, and I said, well, okay, boss, I think I'll follow you. I think that's a pretty good plan. I like your idea of strict liability. So I think I'll be responsible for my own actions. And that's the same choice that you've got. Now, Americans have choices, and oftentimes they just simply refuse to make the choice. But when you refuse to make the choice, that is your choice. You know, that's just the way life is. Your choice is, well, I'm not going to choose, and so then somebody else is going to choose for you, and then they'll just kind of force you into it, and one of these days you'll just wake up, and yeah, you're doing it just like everybody else. It's the way Social Security income taxes are. Now, normal people, they file a 1040 form every year and pay their income tax. I looked at that and I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. I don't want to do that. And there's another taxing system. There's another program that's available to all of us. It's called the tithing program. Tithing. That, again, comes from the Mosaic Law. It came from God. Came from Mount Sinai. Moses came down off the mountain. He says, okay, here's the taxing program, kids. And the people liked it, you know, they thought that was a pretty good plan, and so they practiced it, you know, for a few hundred years, and then they woke up one day and said, no, we want a king, like all the nations around us. Well, and God said, well, now this king's going to tax you, and he's going to be oppressive when he taxes you. And the people said, well, nevertheless, we're going to have a king, and they did, and we've had those oppressive taxes from that day to this. Now, we can choose to go back to tithing, or we can choose to stay with income tax. Now, there's one presidential candidate that's running for office here who is a non-communist. One. His name is Ron Paul. All the rest of them are communists. And, of course, Americans prefer communists and communism to strict liability or tithing. Now, I don't know what Paul's religious affiliations are. I can't tell you that. I don't know the guy, and so I don't know. But I was listening to him and listening to some of these debates as it was going on. And Ron Paul said that he wanted to abolish the income tax. Can you believe that? I mean, the guy wants to do away with the IRS and the income tax. And I thought, God, that's revolutionary. Why in the world would he want to do that? I mean, we've had this income tax, you know, since 1913. I don't know why we'd want to abolish it now. It's been so successful for so long. And Americans love it so much. And it's the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. And he wants to abolish or do away with or phase out our central banking system of the Federal Reserve Bank. And I thought, my God, where is this guy coming from? You know, what planet does this guy live on? Abolish the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto? You mean, here's a contender for the Republican nomination here in the United States. Now, he's not going anywhere. So if you're one of those Ron Paul guys and you're going to vote for Ron Paul, ha ha. Yeah, news for you, kid. Your candidate isn't going to win. Your candidate isn't even going to show up on the charts. You wait until the people of America find out he wants to do away with your central bank and your taxing system. You find out. See, we already went through that drill. I don't know where Ron Paul lives or where he comes from. Other than Texas, he must be Mork from Ork. Because, you see, there was a guy named Steve Forbes back in the 1990s. He proposed the same thing. He was one of those non-communists. He said we should have a flat tax. We shouldn't have this heavy progressive income tax. And the people of America soundly rejected that. And they elected Bill Clinton instead. Now, Americans, you know, they have a choice. The choice is coming up. And they could choose Ron Paul. You know, when those voters go into the voting booths, they could vote for Ron Paul just as easy as they could vote for Hillary Clinton or John McCain or Mike Huckabee or anybody else. But when it's all said and done, listen to my prediction now. When it's all said and done, the people of America will reject Ron Paul, reject the abolition of the central bank, and reject the abolition of the income tax system. And they will reject it soundly with an overwhelming bipartisan support, both Republicans and Democrats will reject that idea. Now, Republicans don't seem to be 100% behind this idea of national health care insurance. Democrats are. All of the Democratic candidates have a health care program. Kind of like the Liberals and the Tories over in England, you know, all the Liberals, the Labour Party, they're all in favor of socialized medicine. And because it's so popular, the Tories, the Conservatives, have to go along with it. And so the Republicans will go along with it because it's going to be so popular. But it's also going to be very, very expensive and very, very intrusive into your privacy and into your finances. And it's going to be very costly. And if you want to participate in it, you can. And if you don't want to participate in it, you don't have to. But then, you know, most people don't know how to opt out. And here at the law school, this is what we specialize in as well. How do you do the opposite? Is there an opposite? Is there something else we can do? And the answer is, yeah, you could practice the Ten Commandments. You know, instead of practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, you can practice the Ten Commandments. And if you do that, you'll get a different result. I mean, if you tithe, you'll get a different result than if you pay the income tax. And if you practice strict liability, that is, if you drop out of Social Security, practice strict liability with gold and silver coin, instead of practicing the heavy progressive income tax with the central bank and paper money and stocks and bonds and so on, you'll get a different result. If you're out in a boat and then you're cruising along, and there's no holes in the boat, you'll get a result. Now, if you want to test this, take a pick, drive it right straight through the bottom of the boat and make a hole there. And then just keep running your boat across the lake and you will get a different result. See how simple that is? All right. So our actions count. And in some cases, our lack of action counts. There's going to be a result that comes from it. You know, that's just the way life is. And so, another issue that comes up over here. It's called insurance, Social Security. That's one. That's limited liability and national health care insurance. And then we have another issue that the candidates are talking about, and it's called AIDS research, cancer research, Alzheimer's research, and disease research. So the candidates take a position and they say, my God, we have this cancer problem and government needs to get involved and get into research and find a solution to cancer. I've mentioned this to you a number of times. So you've got 14 cures to cancer now. And I don't know how many of them came from cancer research sponsored by government. As far as I can remember my research, none of them came from any government research program. But most of them came from allopathic medicine. So we have 14 cures to cancer today in 2008 as I speak. We have 14 cures. And yet government says we need to spend more money on cancer research. I was reading a piece the other day about Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is caused by a selenium deficiency. That's what Joel Wallach said. I want to point out that Alzheimer's only came on the scene in 1979. I mean, in a big way. There's some guy, you know, 100 years ago by the name of Alzheimer's, some German scientist, he put a label on the symptoms called Alzheimer's disease. So it wasn't that it was unknown. It's been around. Very, very rare. About 1979, it really took off and it's been growing ever since. And AIDS, you know, before 1980, you know, nobody ever heard of AIDS. It was a non sequitur. But since about 1980, AIDS has taken off and it's pandemic. It's worldwide now and growing like a wildfire. And so governments come into play. President Bush wants to spend, I think it was $15 billion on AIDS research and AIDS cure. President Clinton and ex-President Clinton and Bush are both working together in an AIDS program to bring cheap Indian drugs to people with AIDS in Botswana, for instance, you know, so that they can live longer. They're going to die from AIDS anyway, but instead of dying in 3 or 4 years, they'll die in 7 or 8 years. So people, you know, prominent people are out working hard, you know, trying to do something for AIDS. Well, 3,000 years ago when Moses was walking around, we had a God who told us how to avoid AIDS, herpes, VD, sexually transmitted diseases, Alzheimer's disease, disease altogether. So yesterday I pointed that out to you. And in fact, I even told you where this disease comes from. If you'll take a look at Exodus 15, verse 26, it comes directly from the Creator. He says, I will lay none of these diseases upon you. Now, if that statement is true, and then we'll just assume now for our theory here that that's a true statement, then all of these expenditures for health care insurance and for disease detection and research is nonsense. So if you're an evolutionist, well, I can see where you need more of it, but if you believe in God, I mean the Creator, I'm not talking about Apollo and Zeus and sweet Jesus and all these gods, you know, that we've created and developed out here, but I mean the Creator of the universe, you know, the guy that wrote the Bible, because he's the guy that says, I'm laying these diseases upon you, so if you're looking for a scapegoat, I'm it. I'm the guy. And then he goes on a step further and says, I'm doing this to you because you violated my statutes. And you'll see that in Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 through 14. He says, if you'll practice my law, I won't lay these diseases upon you, but if you don't practice my law, I'm going to sock it to you. So, if Jesus was running for president, El Presidente, and he was at the presidential debate, and you asked him, what would your policy be, Mr. Jesus, concerning health care insurance and health research? I think he would tell you the same story I just did. I think he would tell you, I'm against it. No sense taxing the healthy people to pay for the sickos. No point messing around with the sickies. They're making their own choices in life. And they're the proximate cause of their own injuries, and because of that, they should suffer and die by themselves. They brought it upon themselves, and there isn't any reason to punish the healthy for the sins and the wickedness of the sick. God, that sounds crass, doesn't it? Did you hear that? Could you imagine a presidential candidate telling you that you sickos out there are the proximate cause of your own injury and there isn't any point in punishing the healthy to pay for the sins and transgressions of the sick? I think he'd tell you, no, I'm against it. Now, that's why we hate this God. I mean, this guy is really crass, isn't he? Insensitive. Politically incorrect. So, when Jesus comes back, I don't think he's going to waste a lot of time running for president. He tells us pretty plainly that he's a King of Kings and a Lord of Lords. Now, what that translates into for Americans, he is a cheap, petty dictator. That's what my daddy was. My daddy explained that to me. He said, I'm King Edward, and your mother is Queen Mildred, and you are a subject. I make the laws, your mother administers the laws, and you sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. And I hated that. My dad was not democratic at all. He was an autocrat in the highest sense of the word. He did not understand kinder and gentler. But, you know, when it was all said and done, I didn't have a whole lot of say in the program. All right, so I think that if Jesus were running for president, I think that's about where he would stand. He said, you know, think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. And he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And then he kind of hits us up between the eyes, and he says, now why are you fools calling me Lord, Lord, when you don't do anything I tell you, in Luke 6:46. Now, we Americans don't do anything that Jesus tells us. We haven't in the past. We are not doing it now. And there isn't any likelihood that we're going to do it in the future. And there's going to be an outcome that comes from it. You are going to get socialized medicine. Like it or lump it. It's coming to a city near you. And you're going to pay for it. Well, unless you drop out. I mean, you know, there's another solution. I mean, you could go back to practicing the Ten Commandments. It's not very likely, but, you know, just in case. When this thing gets heavy enough, when you get a belly full of Hillary, when you've got a belly full of taxation, there is another solution to the problem. You know, before we had socialized medicine, before we had Hillary, before we had the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, there was life in America. And I predict that there will be life here once more at some time in the future. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law or an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. Yeah, that's right, biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, archives. That also can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school has a free 4-hour introductory CD package, and we offer that to you listeners out there free of charge. If you'd like to order one, just call us at the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. All right, tonight's program, How Would Jesus Vote for President? I was sitting down here listening to the candidates. You know, I've been watching the presidential debates, you know, from time to time. I really have a hard time listening to fools spouting off about nonsense, but, you know, in order to make intelligent reports from time to time, or at least try to make intelligent reports from time to time, I have to kind of listen to them, and so I know, well, what's this guy up to? What's this guy saying? And so far, I've been listening to all these guys. The only guy that makes any sense is Ron Paul. But he's the only non-communist running in the pack. All the rest of them are fully in favor of the income tax. That's the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, which is in exact opposition to tithing, which comes from the Bible. And then he's opposed to the central bank. Now, we're entering into a period of economic collapse worldwide, which has been brought on by a process called paper money, unjust weights and balances. In the Bible, there's two statutes. There's a basic law that says, thou shalt not steal. Four words. Thou, that means you, shall, that's a command, not, that's a negative, don't do it, steal. Now, you might not know what stealing is, but stealing is taking property that doesn't belong to you, or that has not been paid for by you, or has not been given to you, that you have not come into lawful possession of. Okay, that's stealing. So, most of us understand stealing, and most of us understand that stealing is wrong. You know, you probably learned that in, I don't know, Sunday school or first grade. And so stealing then is the opposite to property and property rights, and thou shalt not steal is the fundamental basic law of the universe that guarantees our property rights. The opposite to that is from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. So I tell you a little story over here. There was a guy at one of my schools, a tax and status school in Marengo, Illinois, some years back. And this guy he was a preacher is what he was. Christian preacher. And he's sitting in the front row there with his wife. Now, as my custom is, when I teach, I go back to the roots of Anglo-Saxon administration. Anglo-Saxon, that means the English-speaking peoples of Great Britain, Ireland, you know, Wales, Scotland. These English-speaking people have a legal code. It's called Anglo-Saxon law. Where did it come from? You know, a lot of times we call it the common law, the law of the commoners. Where did that come from? Well, it came from Moses at Mount Sinai. You know, we go back through time to Magna Carta, and we go back to King Arthur. We go back, you know, through all these old ancient kings in the Middle Ages and back to earlier times and Jesus and then back through the ancient times. And at some point in time, where did the idea of thou shalt not steal come from? Where did the idea of personal property rights come from? Where did the idea of having property rights originate? And it came from Mount Sinai. And in fact, that law had been around prior to that. I mean, it wasn't something brand new in, you know, 1300 BC. It had been around since the Garden of Eden, but the moral of the story is it was codified by Moses. And so, down through time, you know, it's been codified and it goes from civilization to civilization. And so, as you're studying history and you look back and you find, oh, look at this. And so, one day you wake up and you say, oh my God. Our founding fathers in 1787 incorporated thou shalt not steal into our constitution at Article 1, Section 10, where it says no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. I mean, we word it in different ways in different eras and different societies and different civilizations and empires. You know, we have a different way of wording it or putting it, but, you know, the fundamental law is thou shalt not steal. Well, anyway, this preacher sitting in the front row, and as is my custom, I point that out to my students and pointed out the Ten Commandments and how they apply and one thing and another. We're on break, see. Students are out smoking cigarettes and doing all those things that students do, you know, go potty and during break. And so he said to me, and there's about 10 people standing around, you know, asking questions, one thing and another at the break time. And he said, you're causing all of these people to lose their salvation. Dead silence. I was kind of shocked. First of all, he wasn't even involved in the conversation with the other 10 or 15 students standing around the podium. And I was pointing out to them, they were all kind of shocked, you know, when your teacher stands up and starts talking about the Ten Commandments in a tax school, it's kind of shocking on day one, you know. And so this preacher, he was kind of shocked. Now, you wouldn't think that a preacher would be shocked with the Ten Commandments, but he was. And furthermore, he went a step further and says, my God, you're teaching these Ten Commandments to these people. Why, these people are all going to go to hell listening to you. I thought that's kind of a bizarre, peculiar position to take, but, you know, that's the religious point of view. So, I said, well, I take it then that you're opposed to the Ten Commandments being taught and being observed and followed here in modern 20th century America. And he said, I am, absolutely, because that law has been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. I've heard that story before, so I wasn't totally shocked, but, you know, here I was in class, and here are students, you know, there's about 80 students in that class at that time. Here's 10 of them standing up here at the podium, break time, asking questions and chit-chatting, and here's this preacher sitting in the front row, you know, right there in front of me. He says, hey, the Ten Commandments have been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. So I said, well, let's test that theory and see, you know, if it's got any merit. So behind me, I had a whiteboard, so I wrote up on the whiteboard 759. And that 759 represents the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments that we find in the Bible. I know, send me an email and tell me, oh no, Mr. Gordon, there's only 613. And that's because the Jews say there's 613. Yeah, I've heard that story too, Tom. I've heard that. But I read the Bible all by myself, for myself. And while I went through it, I counted them up, and I came up to 759. Now, I don't know why the Jews came up with 613. I haven't really had a long conversation with them. They're 146 short. I don't know if it's because they can't count to 759 or because they count them a little different, or maybe I counted one of them twice, or, you know, something on that order. It whether they're 613 or 759 is really academic. You know, it's not a part of our conversation or the point at hand here, but, you know, if you want to correct me, go ahead and send me an email. But I can count, and I'm telling you there's 759. Now, there might be 760 or 61 or 65 or 810. Maybe I missed a few, but I did find 759. And I can articulate every single one of them and tell you what the penalty is. Now, how's that for a plan? Well, anyway, I put the 759 up on the board, and I said, let's test this. And I said, you've heard it said by them of old time, sir, I'm sure. Thou shalt not commit adultery. He nodded his head. And the rest of the people, as I looked at them and made eye contact, were all kind of shaking their heads like, yeah, we've all heard, thou shalt not commit adultery. I said, okay. He's sitting there with his wife, and I said, sir, I would like to take your wife home tonight, and I would like to sleep with her, which is my polite way of saying to a Christian preacher, I want to take your wife home tonight and have sex with her. See, but I wanted to be real polite because you don't want to embarrass religious people. So I didn't want to use the word sex. So I said, I want to sleep with her. That's a euphemism for, I'm going to bang her tonight. I'm going to nail her, you know, as if you're a welder. All right, now, he was shocked. And as I do things like this for a little shock effect, see. So I kind of looked at the rest of the people. They were all shocked, too. I mean, you know, when you tell a guy, I want to take your wife home and sleep with her tonight, that is a little shocking, isn't it? And he regained his composure, and he blurted out, why, that wouldn't be showing love to your neighbor. And I said very plainly, I said, neighbor, I don't love you. I love your wife, and she's the one I want to sleep with. And there's this long, pregnant pause. You know, you can only be shocked so much. And then you kind of gasp for breath. And when he said, that wouldn't be showing love to your neighbor. And I said, well, I don't love you, neighbor. I love your wife. And he said, well, that law hasn't been done away with. Ah, that law, the adultery law. Oh, it hasn't been nailed to the cross with Jesus. Can you follow that, kids? All right. So I turned around and I wrote a 1 under the 9 with a minus sign, and then I wrote a sum of 758. And I said, well, there's one law that hasn't been abolished or done away with. Now, remember, this guy's premise is the law has been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. And that by teaching the Ten Commandments, I'm causing these people to lose their salvation. Aha! But now the man agrees with me that there's one of the Ten Commandments that hasn't been abolished. All right. Fair enough. Now, he's sitting there tape recording this. He's got his big, this is back in 1983, and he had one of these big boom box, you know, kind of like Harold, you know, on Red Green. He has a great big tape recorder, and it's sitting here on the table, plugged in, and he's taping this little session here during the break. And so I said, well, now, you've heard it said by them of old time, thou shalt not steal. And he nodded his head, yes, I've heard that. And I looked around to the other 10 people or 15 or whatever standing there, and they're all nodding their head, you know, yeah, we've heard that. Okay. So I reached over and I took the cord that's plugged into the outlet right over there in the wall, and I just jerked it, snap, and I just took it right out of the wall, right out of the socket. I picked up his tape recorder and I looked him right in the eyeball and I said, mine. God, you talk about shocked now. This guy, he's looking at me like I'm Mork from Ork, see? And he blurted out, that's my tape recorder! Well, picture yourself in the same circumstance. I just snap the cord out of the wall, pick up your tape recorder, look you in the eyeball and say, mine! And so, he shocked the way he was. He said, that's my tape recorder. And I said, no, it isn't. It's mine! Mine! I just took it! And I said to him, I said, I'm bigger than you are. And I'm practicing from each according to his ability, and to each according to his need. I said, you have a tape recorder. I don't. I have a need for a tape recorder. So I'm taking yours. Now don't get pious now and go call the police and say George Gordon stole my tape recorder. Don't turn to these good people and tell them that I have stolen your tape recorder. Because that law that says thou shalt not steal has been nailed to the cross with Jesus. Remember? Therefore, sir, there can be no sin. It cannot be a sin to take your tape recorder because theft, stealing, has been abolished. It's been repealed. It's been done away with. That's what we call the closing question. I just shut up. And now there's this long, pregnant pause. And pretty soon he says, well, that law hasn't been abolished either. You know, the light bulb is starting to come on in this preacher's brain. So I turned up here. Now remember, we got 758 on the whiteboard. So I put a minus one under the eight. And I drew a line under it. And I came up with a new sum of 757. Now, by this time, we're reaching the end of our break time. You know, 15-minute break. And I said, now, sir, if we wanted to go through all of the Ten Commandments and all of the statutes and all of the commandments that God gave us at Mount Sinai, we would come up to 759. And there's a penalty for each and every one of these laws. And I could sit here, it takes me 42 hours to make this presentation. And we call it the Mosaic Law School. And boys and girls, when you come here to the Mosaic Law School, I can show you 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, all organized into 133 titles of law that all carry a penalty. There are 26 penalties, or 26 or 28 penalties, for the violation of these 759 laws, of which one of those penalties is capital, one of those penalties is death. And I showed you the other day that the death penalty applies to 24 categories of crime. Out of the 133, 24 of them are capital felonies. Why don't you go ask your preacher next Sunday if he can do the same thing. And hey, kids, I've never been to seminary. I'm a general contractor by trade. By profession. I'm a plumbing contractor. I'm a plumber by trade. I'm a farmer. I'm a school teacher. But I'm not a preacher. I'm not a prophet. And I'm not a priest. And I'm not a pope. But I'm not brain dead either. And I can count. Now, in the presidential race, how many of the presidential candidates are opposed to theft? Thou shalt not steal. How many of them are opposed to the income tax or the central bank, which has given you inflation and robbed you blind for about 100 years? Huh? There's only one. It's Ron Paul. And if Jesus was running for president and they ask him, well, what's your position on the income tax? And what's your position on the economy? And what's your position on the Federal Reserve? I think that Jesus would be right there in the Ron Paul camp as he withdraws from the presidential race because nobody will vote for him. And I think he would throw his support to Ron Paul. And I don't know that Ron Paul is a Christian. I don't even know if he's religious. I don't know if he goes to church. But he does have two positions that are scriptural. And those two positions that are scriptural are, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, which is translated in our Constitution, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. I mean, you know, you can word it any way you want, but that's the bottom line. That's called property and property rights. Now, by the way, kids, property is the holy grail of law. In Anglo-Saxon administration, property and your right to hold property, your right to dispose of property, your right to own property, your right to deal with property is holy, righteous, and it's sanctified. You know, if you want to get religious about it. The first blank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of all right to property. The Ten Commandments guarantee, establish, make, and found your property rights with these four words, thou shalt not steal. You got one presidential candidate running for office. If Jesus was running for office, you'd have two. Two that support property and property rights. Just thought I'd throw that one out there. All right, now let's take one more. We got 6-7 minutes here. How about the Securities and Exchange Commission? You know, the Enron company went upside down. And the other day, the Supreme Court said, you stockholders in Enron, if you want to sue Deloitte & Touche, or you want to sue whoever the accounting firm was, I guess it wasn't Deloitte, but it was some big accounting firm. If you want to sue them for their collusion with Enron in defrauding you out of your money, you can't do that. The Supreme Court just told us that the other day. And I looked at that and I said, God, how come? Why? Why not? I mean, if I was damaged by Boise Cascade, if I was damaged by General Motors, I could sue them. How come I can't sue Pfizer for giving me a bad vaccine that harms my child? Or how come I can't sue Enron or the accounting firms for having defrauded me out of my investment? Well, the Supreme Court says you can't do that. Now, why don't you pray to Jesus? Why don't you pray and see if God will give you any relief? Because, you see, when you bought those stocks in Enron, those were unjust weights and balances. When you got that mortgage on your house, that was an unjust weight or balance. Now, there's two statutes here in the Bible. If you're of a mind to, write them down so you can go check them out and see if I'm lying to you again. It's in Leviticus 19, that's Leviticus, that's the third book of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Get to the third book of the Bible, Leviticus, turn to chapter 19, and then go down 1, 2, 9, 11, go to verse 35 and 36, 2. And you'll see this statute in there. It says, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, or words to that effect. All right, now there's a second statute here. It's in Deuteronomy 25, verse 13 through 16. Now that's the fifth book of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. You can see I've been to Sunday school, so I memorized first five books of the Bible. Deuteronomy, chapter 25. Now go to verse 13, you'll see the same thing. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Now, if you want to get really technical, you could look up the word usury, and then you could chase that one out and code plead it, and you'll find out that usury is against the law. Usury. It's mentioned in the Bible 23 times. 23. Check me out. Go get a concordance. Look up the word usury. 23. Now, when we code plead out usury, we find out that God told us don't practice usury. Don't charge it. Don't pay it. Don't participate in it. Now take a look at your mortgage payment every month. Part of it's principal and part of it's interest. Interest is translated usury. usury in the Bible, boys and girls. Can you say usury? All right. Now, we were told plainly. Now, maybe your preacher didn't tell you, maybe your mommy and daddy didn't tell you, but usury is a criminal offense. It is the only theft crime punishable by death. Usury, paying interest on the mortgage of your home, carries the death penalty, so says the creator of the universe, who sent us the message by way of Moses, our first representative, by the way. That's where representative government comes from. Comes from Moses at Mount Sinai. He was our very first representative. Alright, now, in modern America, you know, everybody pays interest. You know, you got an interest charge on your car payment. You got an interest charge on your credit card. You got an interest charge on your mortgage. You know, you people are all paying interest and usury. Capital felony. And you don't think anything about it. Boys and girls, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And the reason that you hate God and you hate the Bible and you hate the law of God and the law of Moses is because that law tells you thou shalt not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And you want to have stocks and bonds. All of you Enron and all of you people out there, you want to buy stocks and bonds and put it into your 401k for your retirement. Now, the penalty for using unjust weights and balances that we went through in 1783 is the loss of 90% of our capital or principal. 90% of our property. That's what happened in 1783. So far, between 1933 and last night at 5 o'clock, you have lost 98%. That's so far. So, boys and girls, for practical purposes, all of your capital, all of your wealth has already been dissipated. It's already gone. And what you people are arguing over is the last 2 cents. That's what, you know, for practical purposes, you're all flat-ass broke. You're upside down. You're bankrupt. The whole nation. And the president and the Congress, with their bailout programs over here in Wall Street and the stock market and the plunge protection team, they're just trying to stand up the dead body. That's all. They're just trying to keep the dead body out here in front of you. All right, so now you got that story in front of you. Now, you were told plainly that the Securities and Exchange Commission and the securities industry and the mortgage industry, which is in free fall, which is collapsing around you. It's the mortgage collapse, the housing collapse. All right. How would Jesus vote for president? He would abolish the Securities and Exchange Commission. He would abolish the IRS. He would abolish the central bank. He would abolish interest and usury. And that's why, boys and girls, Jesus can never be president of the United States. There isn't one of you people out there that would vote for Jesus. And there's damn few of you that are going to vote for Ron Paul either. Hey, I'm running out of time here, so I'm going to have to give you a reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. So if you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. That's it. Our time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.